This week in Chicago history now with Anna DeVlantis. 1979 was a sad year. I remember this tragedy all too well, Anna.
Yeah, you know, it's just a tragic week in Chicago history that had an enormous impact on the city. You're right, Bob, if you were alive at this time 45 years ago, you'll remember it. The Friday before Memorial Day, May 25th, 1979, L.A.-bound American Airlines Flight 191 out of O'Hare barely made it off the ground before it came crashing down, killing all 258 passengers, 13 crew members on board. And it was a plane doomed from the start, as we later learned. The DC-10 accelerated down the runway. As soon as it reached takeoff speed, the left engine broke away. It rolled over the aircraft wing. It damaged the hydraulic system in the process. And the plane barely made it 300 feet into the air before it just banked and came straight down to the ground and exploded. It was such a terrifying turn of events. And we pulled a clip from the Channel 9 broadcast later that night, 1979, Len O'Connor at the anchor desk reflecting on the tragedy that had occurred earlier that day in Chicago.
There are no words to console the families of those who perished in today's crash of the American Airlines plane. If there is any good side to these monumental tragedies that occur, I think it is the dedication and this courage that is shown by the policemen and the firemen and all the others who do what has to be done at the scene of tragedy. This courage does nothing, of course, to restore the lives of those who are dead, but it gives us a lesson in charity and human values that provides a glimmer of relief from the sadness that prevails at a time like this. God forbid that we will soon have to endure something like the crash of Flight 191. But if it happens, when it happens, the consolation will again be the willingness of those who do not run away from these bitter tasks that have to be done. We owe these people something, I think. And I am Len O'Connor.
Remember how people were afraid to get on a DC-10 after that, Anna?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. The whole, no one wanted to go on a DC-10. I remember my parents talking about that. We were going to go to England, and you don't go on a DC-10. And it turns out the DC-10s, the entire fleet was grounded, but it wasn't the DC-10 that was the problem. It was this particular DC-10. The NTSB went back and looked at it and found that the maintenance crew had cut some corners, and the engine's pylon assembly was not done correctly. It was damaged and put back in. And over time, just takeoff and landing, the impact and the stress on the system had caused this whole thing to occur. It was, you know, really a maintenance mistake.
Terrible tragedy. And now we turn to some advertising history and a famous commercial in Chicago. Tell us about this.
This week, 1963, Bob, Toucan Sam, a Fruit Loops fame, was first introduced as the cereal mascot by the Leo Burnett ad agency here in Chicago. They're responsible for so many iconic brands. But the famous Fruit Loops spokesperson debuted on the box and on TV this week. We pulled two ads for you, Bob, back-to-back here. The first, one of the very first ads that featured Toucan Sam from the 60s. And for some reason, Toucan Sam, back in the day, he liked to speak a lot of pig Latin. I'm not sure why, but that was his thing. And then followed by that is a more modern version of Fruit Loops Toucan Sam, and with the more modern slogan that I think you'll recognize.
Crispy and delicious day for breakfast or for acting snake. Kellogg's puts real orange, lemon, and cherry flavors with colors to match in these crispy little cereal circles made from oats, then spangles them with big crunchy sugar crystals, and do they else make delicious day. Try them. Sparkling with ogre shake.
They so delicious day. Oops, fry, oops,
lay. Follow your nose.
Snootus Brutus.
It always knows.
Kellogg's Fruit Loop cereal.
Maybe that'll be Jerry Seinfeld's next movie, Anna.
Oopsray, oopslay. Care for any of those this morning, Bob? Just so you know, though, hate to burst your bubble. The flavors are not actually represented in the colors. They all taste the same. Sorry about that, but that's the truth.
let's talk about Chicago as really an invention capital as far as video games, right?
You know, I remember going to the arcade growing up. It was the thing to do in the 80s. Like, oh my gosh, you wanted your parents to give you some roll of quarters and go to the arcade. It was like the thing. And, you know, if anybody who was part of that generation might remember the M logo on so many of those big upright video machines, the logo stands for Midway Games, Chicago-based gaming company that really was front and center of video gaming in the world. They had started out with pinball machines. That's what they produced, but then had a big business break this week, 1978, when they licensed Space Invaders from a company in Japan and brought it to the U.S. It was a huge hit. Every kid wanted to play Space Invaders. And then 2 years later, they brought Pac-Man. 2 more years, Miss Pac-Man. They brought Galaga and so many of the names that have survived to this day, Bob. And really, ultimately, the video arcade was born out of this. People were heading to the mall now to play all these big upright games, and it's just pretty cool. Unfortunately, PlayStation, Nintendo Game Boy, and a lot of these handheld devices and in-home devices kind of killed their mojo. But I've been told that there's like kind of a resurgence now with these old video games. If you go to the West Loop, there's this place called Emporium that's super packed. It's a bar, and you can play Pac-Man and Galaga and all the old, you know, old games, Frogger and Donkey Kong and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of cool.
The kids are into it. And this week in 1978, it was Space Invaders from Chicago invading the entire nation. Take me back to Chicago and take me back to 1978. Anna?
So band Chicago, Bob, you know this well, released that song 1978. Not only one of their early hits, though, it was also a song reflecting on their early days in Chicago when they were a garage band back in the neighborhoods, calling themselves CTA, Chicago Transit Authority. In the late 70s, the band was Chicago was starting to make it in the recording industry. They were now in Los Angeles, grinding it out, making hits, making a name. And that song there reflects on their carefree days back in their boyhood homes, hanging out on the street corners, going to the Tasty Freeze on a hot summer night. And it was reflecting a time when life was just a lot simpler. And if you think about it, though, for them, the journey was certainly worth it out of the neighborhoods. All that hard work paid off. 18 platinum, 8 multi-platinum albums, numerous awards. They've sold over 100 million albums and an eventual invitation into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Not bad for some guys from the neighborhood, right? Just one of the longest running and most successful groups of all time. So,
and back in 78, yeah, Terry Kath was on that album. Peter Cetera and Chaka Khan sang background on that song.
Forgot about that.
Let's go back to this week in 1921 for a little Chicago coffee shop history.
Oh, my gosh. This is a weird one I found, Bob. Just strange. Way back turn of the century, Chicago's criminal courthouse was located inside that big, beautiful brownstone building near Hubbard and Dearborn. Still there. I think it's occupied by mostly law offices today. But that was the criminal courts complex there and next door, where they house the prisoners and the death row inmates, in fact. And a coffee shop opened up next to it this week in 1921 to serve that population. Literally, they called it the Noose Coffee Shop. Kind of a morbid name, right? If you think about it, for like, they serve the last meals for the death row inmates before they were hung. So it just, the Noose is what they called it, yeah. Like kind of two on the nose, really. But they served the last meals, right? And then other prisoners in the jail reportedly would be able to order food and be delivered right to their cell block, kind of like an Uber Eats for a jail inmates back in the day, I guess you could say. Just an unusual business model for sure, right? But it was super popular with the courthouse crowd and attorneys, judges, and reporters. And you know, go figure. It was a big hit.
And that that big old brownstone on Hubbard between Dearborn and Clark, the building is still pretty much the same, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it gorgeous? I walk by there and just remark, and you know, it's just one of those gorgeous old buildings in Chicago that just has, you know, stood the test of time. It's just another remarkable architectural site in our city, just stuck right there in between like nightclubs and all the other things that have cropped up in the neighborhood. So
yeah,
pretty.
And good for us for not letting anybody tear that down. The Museum of Science and Industry in the news today, but we recognize another great cultural institution on this day, don't we?
Yeah, happy birthday to Chicago's Adler Planetarium, 94 years young. It opened this week, 1930, Bob, a gift to the city from Sears Vice President Max Adler. He had gone to Europe and he had seen these incredible night sky projectors and thought, we need one in Chicago. So he commissioned one, an enormous projector. And I think we have some audio here, Michelle Nichols from the Adler Planetarium describing it.
In 1930, the Adler Planetarium was founded as the first planetarium in the Western Hemisphere. And to showcase the planetarium capabilities, we needed a projector in our theater. So the projector was the first of its kind in the Western Hemisphere. The way the projector worked, we often just kind of boil it down to it's a star projector, but it did so much more than stars. It had two spherical pieces on a middle spine. And so the two spherical pieces had bright light bulbs on the inside, the light shone through plates and lenses. You could do the sky above the entire Earth.
Boy, I remember when I was a kid, my dad taking me to the sky show there, and still nothing like sitting in that room. It just takes you to another part of the universe and out of this
such
world.
Such a resource we have here, Bob. And you know, you think about the people who work there too. I was there with my daughter recently, and they're just so knowledgeable. It's just fascinating to learn from them and all the people who just are so invested in that. Also, one of the most beautiful views of the city, looking back from the Adler, too, if you want to just make a day visit out, you know, get out there again and check it out. It's really worth it.
And if you're a space junkie like me, there are some great capsules still there. A very historic spot. Anna DeVlantis, This Week in Chicago History. More next Wednesday. Thank you, Anna.
Thanks, Bob.